That incredibly specific feeling we all get at work these days.
Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right. It's like it's that split second right before your finger hits the enter key on an AI prompt.
Yes.
You're staring down this task, and you know it should realistically take you, I don't know, 3 hours, maybe more.
Easily 3 hours.
Yeah. But you know the generative AI model sitting in that other tab can do it in 10 seconds.
It's a massive dopamine hit,
That
honestly.
it really is. It feels like you just discovered a secret superpower and, nobody is watching.
You're basically hacking your own productivity.
Yeah.
And in that moment, you just feel like you're outsmarting the entire system.
Exactly. But what if that exact split second, that tiny moment of clicking enter to save a little time, is actually the exact moment where a harmless shortcut morphs into a massive company-destroying legal or security liability?
Which happens way more often than people think.
Right. So, welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are exploring the hidden risks of generative AI in the workplace.
It's such a crucial topic right now.
Yeah, it really is. We're pulling from a really fascinating set of responsible AI compliance training scenarios. These were developed by Excellus, and our mission today is to figure out how to navigate this this totally new invisible minefield.
Yeah, invisible is the perfect word for it.
Because for you listening, we know you're already using these tools. I mean, the technology is everywhere.
I'd be crazy not to use them, honestly.
Right. So what we really need to look at is the exact mechanism of how the old rules of corporate compliance are just completely breaking down under the weight of this new tech.
That framing is so vital because looking at corporate AI compliance through the lens of these Excellus scenarios, what becomes immediately clear is that these massive headline-making violations, they rarely start with a malicious insider.
Right, it's not some spy in the company.
Exactly. Nobody is trying to sabotage their own employer. It's almost entirely driven by the illusion of an efficiency win.
Huh.
Excellus actually refers to this as the decision moment.
The decision moment. I like that.
Yeah, it's that tiny high-pressure window right before our brain's rationalization process just completely takes over.
Okay, let's unpack this with the most common everyday AI temptation, the text summary.
Oh, everyone does this.
Everyone. So we have this scenario from Excellus where an employee has a 10-page transcript from a massive quarterly strategy meeting.
A very long meeting.
Right. And we are talking highly sensitive stuff, unreleased product roadmaps,
Yeah.
Q3 financial targets, internal restructuring plans, all of it.
The real secret sauce.
Exactly. And she needs a quick bulleted summary for her team's afternoon sync. So she pastes the entire transcript into a public AI chat tool, asks for the summary, and gets it instantly.
10 seconds later, she's done.
Yeah. And from her perspective, it feels completely private. I mean, it mimics a one-on-one text message conversation.
And that interface design is actually part of the psychological trap.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It looks like a private messaging app, which kind of hacks our social conditioning. We treat it like a closed loop.
Because it looks like I'm just texting a friend.
Exactly. But the employee in this scenario doesn't realize she is essentially performing an act of publishing.
Wow. Publishing.
Yeah. The hidden risk that Excellus points out here is that public AI models often claim the legal right to train on the data you submit in those prompts.
But wait, I want to challenge the mechanics of that.
Sure.
Because if I type something into an AI, I can usually go into my settings and clear my chat history. Doesn't that delete the data?
It's a really common misconception.
Because it's not like the AI is storing my specific file in some digital cabinet that someone else can just open, right? It feels so private, just you in the chat box. It's like whispering a secret to a calculator.
Whispering to a calculator, it's a great way to put how it feels.
Mm-hmm.
But deleting your chat history only removes it from your user interface.
Okay.
It does not necessarily extract it from the underlying model, especially if that data has already been used for training.
Wait, really? So it's still in there?
Yeah. When you feed that 10-page strategy transcript into a public LLM, the model processes the text to adjust its internal parameters, its neural weights.
Oh, right, the
So
weights.
it's actively learning the relationships between the words, the concepts, and the specific strategic shifts your company is making.
So it's less like putting a confidential file in a public filing cabinet and more like, I don't know, dropping a drop of blue dye into a public swimming pool.
That is a much more accurate way to visualize it,
Like
yes.
once it's in there and dispersed into the water, you cannot just reach in and pull your specific drop of dye back out.
You literally can't. The data becomes part of the neural network's collective associative knowledge.
Man, that is terrifying.
Right. Consider the implications 3 months down the line. Say a major competitor logs into that same public AI tool,
Okay.
and they ask a really broad question like, what are the emerging trends in product roadmaps for this specific market sector?
Oh, no.
Because the AI has integrated the patterns from your unreleased transcript, it might generate an answer that includes elements drawn directly from your company's proprietary strategy.
Wow.
The data, once submitted, is out in the wild.
Okay, that changes the risk calculation entirely. But knowing that people are not going to stop using summarization tools, I mean, they're just too useful. How do we actually sanitize this workflow?
Right, because you can't put the genie back in the bottle.
We definitely cannot expect employees to just manually read 10 pages if a tool can do it in seconds.
No, you can't. The solution lies in method and authorization.
Okay, what does that look like?
Well, if your organization has invested in an approved, secure, internal AI sandbox, you know, an enterprise environment where the provider guarantees zero data retention for training that is your only safe harbor.
Right, so a closed system.
Exactly. But if you're forced to use a public tool, the workflow must include manual sanitization before the prompt is ever written.
Like redacting it.
Yes. You have to strip out all proper nouns, client names, financial figures, and project code names. Excellus actually synthesizes this into a brilliant, memorable heuristic.
Oh, I love a good heuristic. What is it?
If you would not email it to a stranger, do not type it into a public AI tool.
The stranger rule. Okay. That immediately breaks the illusion that you're whispering secrets to a calculator.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, if I wouldn't send this transcript to a random person I met on the subway, I shouldn't feed it into a public learning algorithm.
It forces a cognitive pause. It reframes the AI from a private, subservient assistant to a highly observant public bulletin board.
That makes total sense. So if handing sensitive data into an AI poses a massive risk of leakage, trusting the complex logic that comes out of an AI must carry its own set of dangers.
Oh, absolutely.
Let's look at how the machine's underlying logic can fail us, particularly in IT and software development. The speed trap in this next Excellus scenario is just fascinating.
Development is where the stakes escalate exponentially. We are moving from data privacy straight into structural security.
Right. So the scenario goes like this. We have a developer using an AI coding assistant, like Microsoft Copilot.
Very common tool.
Very common. He needs to write a Python script for a customer-facing login portal. The AI generates the entire block of code in about 10 seconds.
Which is mind-blowing speed.
It is. And the crucial detail in the source material is that the developer runs it through standard functional testing, and it passes.
Right.
The code runs clean, the user can log in, the dashboard lights up green. So he prepares to push this code to the live production environment.
And this is where the trap snaps shut.
Right. But I have to play devil's advocate here. I write code, I test code. If my QA process says the code works, why do I care if a human took 3 hours to write it or an AI took 10 seconds? Wait, if it passes standard testing, isn't that the whole point of testing?
This raises an important question about how we validate software today.
Right.
We have to redefine what working actually means in the context of modern software architecture.
Mm-hmm.
Passing a functional test simply means the code executes its primary directive on a sunny day.
On a sunny day, meaning everything goes right.
Exactly. The user types in their password, and the door opens. But AI models frequently introduce invisible structural security vulnerabilities that standard testing is just not designed to catch.
How does an AI introduce a vulnerability if it is supposedly trained on millions of lines of the best code in the world?
Because it is also trained on millions of lines of outdated, deprecated, and totally insecure code.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The AI does not possess a contextual understanding of modern cybersecurity frameworks. It's essentially a probabilistic engine predicting the next most likely string of text.
So it doesn't actually know what it's doing.
Not at a conceptual level.
Yeah.
So when asked to write a login portal, it might pull an authentication library that was highly popular and therefore statistically prevalent in its training data 5 years ago.
But 5 years in tech is a lifetime.
Exactly. And that library has since been flagged for critical vulnerabilities.
Whoa.
Or it might write a database query that lacks proper input validation, leaving the portal wide open to an equal injection attack.
So it's like the AI builds a house with a perfectly working front door, but it uses cheap, brittle glass for the back windows.
Yes.
Just because that's the material it saw used most often in its historical training data.
And those back windows will pass a basic home inspection if the inspector is only asked to check if the front door opens and closes.
Man, that is a scary thought.
Functional testing misses the edge cases. Malicious attackers do not use the front door. They specifically hunt for the brittle glass.
Right.
The real danger highlighted in the Excella scenario is the psychological effect of the speed.
Because it only took 10 seconds.
Exactly. Because the generation took 10 seconds, and because the functional test passed immediately, the developer's guard drops. Speed creates a false sense of simplicity.
They assume because it was easy to generate, it must be robust. So how do development teams counter that psychology? You cannot ban AI coding assistants. I mean, developers would revolt.
They absolutely would. So you implement the junior intern rule?
The junior intern rule. Okay, explain that.
This is a critical mindset shift. Development teams must be trained to view the AI not as a senior engineer who writes flawless code, but as a hyper-fast, incredibly eager, yet entirely naive first-day intern making statistical guesses.
I love that. A hyper-fast, naive intern.
Right. You would never push a junior intern's first draft directly to a live, customer-facing environment.
Never. You'd review it.
You validate it line by line. You run rigorous, specific security reviews and penetration tests. Ultimately, the human developer assumes full legal and professional responsibility for that code.
Because you can't fire the AI.
Exactly. If there is a data breach, you cannot stand in front of your board of directors and blame the AI.
The accountability remains entirely human. We have to supervise the machine's logic.
Always.
But what happens when the machine completely bypasses our logic by hacking our human senses? I mean, developers are actively looking for flaws in AI logic, but finance teams are facing the opposite threat.
This is a wild shift.
Yeah, AI outputs that are absolutely flawlessly mimicking human beings.
The deepfake scenarios are particularly alarming, because they represent a threshold where technological capability has genuinely outpaced human sensory perception.
This Excella scenario feels like a plot from a corporate espionage thriller.
It really does.
But it is happening to finance departments constantly. So a finance team member receives a voicemail. It is the company's CFO.
Okay.
The CFO is urgently requesting a wire transfer to a new unvetted supplier. And the critical detail is that the voice explicitly asks the employee to skip the standard multi-step approval process.
Of course.
Because the deadline is in 10 minutes and a massive deal is on the line. And the voice is a perfect, indistinguishable clone.
We need to put you, the listener, in the hot seat for a moment. Think about the last voice message your manager or executive left you.
Yeah, think about it.
What made it sound authentic? Was it their specific cadence? The slight gravel in their pitch?
Or like the way they take a breath between sentences?
Yes, exactly. An AI voice cloning model captures and replicates all of those acoustic parameters in seconds. And it no longer requires hours of high-fidelity studio recording to train the model.
It does. I thought you needed, like, days of audio.
Not anymore. A fraudster can map a vocal tract using just 3 to 4 minutes of publicly available audio.
3 to 4 minutes?
That's it. A recent podcast interview, a recorded panel at a conference, or just a video posted to LinkedIn.
That is insane. I still feel like I would hear something off, though, like a digital artifact or a weird robotic inflection or maybe an unnatural pause.
That assumption is precisely what fraudsters rely on. You are expecting the technology of 2 years ago.
Oh, man.
Today's commercial voice cloning tools synthesize breathing, micro-hesitations, and emotional resonance to the human ear. Processed through the compressed audio of a standard cellular network or voicemail system,
yeah,
it is mathematically indistinguishable from the real person. You cannot trust your ears.
Here's where it gets really interesting. It's the equivalent of a burglar using a perfectly duplicated key on your front door.
Oh, that's a perfect analogy.
Right. You cannot tell the key is fake just by looking at it in the lock. You have to verify the identity of the person holding it.
Exactly.
So if our senses are obsolete, how does a finance team member actually respond to that urgent voicemail?
The defense requires absolute reliance on process over perception. The Excella training emphasizes that you can never act on an urgent financial or data-related request based solely on a voice message, an email, or a text.
No matter how real it sounds.
No matter how authentic it seems. You must verify the request through a completely separate, trusted, out-of-band channel.
Meaning, you do not just hit reply to the strange email, and you certainly do not call back the phone number that left the voicemail.
Never. You call the CFO directly on the internal number listed in your secure corporate directory.
Right.
You speak to them live, or you require them to authenticate the request through your internal financial software. The most vital takeaway from this scenario is recognizing the psychological manipulation.
The urgency.
Yes. The red flags are not audio glitches. The true red flags are the sudden urgency, the appeal to authority, and the explicit instruction to bypass established approval processes.
Because they know the voice is perfect.
Exactly. Fraudsters know the voice clone is perfect, so they deploy panic to ensure you skip the verification steps.
They are not hacking the financial software. They are hacking the human's stress response.
That's exactly what it is.
Which brings us to an interesting collision of concepts. We just talked about criminals using voice clones to steal money. But what happens when legitimate internal departments try to use those exact same cloning tools to save money and accidentally step into a massive legal liability?
Oh, this moves us right into the realm of intellectual property and the ownership myth.
Yeah.
The laws surrounding copyright and personal likeness are just violently colliding with the convenience of generative AI.
Let's look at the first of two marketing scenarios from Excellus. A marketing team is planning a massive new brand campaign. They realize that bringing back the specific professional voice artist they used for last year's campaign is going to cost them like $8,000 in studio and talent fees.
Which is a big chunk of budget.
Huge. So someone on the team points out that they already have hours of her past paid recordings sitting on a corporate hard drive.
Oh, I see where this is going.
The shortcut is obvious. Feed those old recordings into an AI voice generator, clone her voice, type in the new script, and generate the audio for free.
The financial logic seems airtight to a marketing team operating under budget constraints. I mean, they assume that because they paid for the original audio files, they own the rights to use them however they see fit.
Right.
Legally, that assumption is a complete disaster.
Unpack the legal distinction there, because honestly, if the company bought the recordings, why don't they own the rights to the voice on them?
Because owning a recording is not the same as owning a biometric identity.
Ah, okay.
When the company paid the voice artist last year, they purchased the rights to that specific performance, the actual words she spoke in the studio.
Right.
They did not purchase the underlying rights to her actual vocal identity or her acoustic likeness.
Oh, wow.
So taking her past work and using a machine to synthesize entirely new sentences that she never actually spoke without her explicit separate written consent, that is a severe violation of her rights of publicity.
It would be like buying a painting from a famous artist and then feeding that painting into an AI to generate 100 new paintings in their exact style and selling them under their name.
Exactly.
You bought the canvas, you didn't buy the artist's brain.
And the legal liability for the company in that scenario far exceeds the $8,000 they were trying to save.
Oh, I bet.
But the second marketing scenario from Excellus is where the concept of ownership gets even more complicated. And it usually shocks teams who rely heavily on text generation.
This scenario is a massive reality check. So a marketing team decides to supercharge their output. They use an AI tool to write 60 pieces of marketing content in a single quarter. We were talking blog posts, social media campaigns, detailed product descriptions.
That's a ton of content.
A ton. They bring the final portfolio to their legal department, expecting praise for their efficiency. And legal asks a single devastating question. Do you ensure we hold the copyright for this material?
And the marketing team almost certainly assumed that because they generated on company time using company tools, it belonged to the company.
Right. But I have to push back here on behalf of anyone who has spent hours working with an LLM.
Go for it.
Let's say I spend 3 hours engineering an incredibly detailed prompt. I dictate the exact tone, the narrative structure, the target audience, and the specific vocabulary the AI must use.
You put a lot of work in.
Right. From a creative standpoint, I'm directing the machine. I feel like the author. Why doesn't international copyright law see my prompt engineering as authorship? But we came up with the brilliant prompts. Doesn't that count?
If we connect this to the bigger picture to understand this, we have to look at a foundational legal concept called the idea-expression dichotomy.
Idea-expression dichotomy. Okay.
Copyright law does not protect ideas. It only protects the tangible human expression of those ideas.
Interesting.
When you write a highly detailed 3-hour prompt, the courts currently view that prompt as the idea. You are giving the machine a set of instructions.
Okay. I see.
But the actual execution, the literal choice of words, the sentence structure, the paragraph breaks that end up on the page, is performed by the algorithmic model.
So I am the director giving the creative vision, but the AI is the one actually holding the camera and pressing the shutter.
Exactly. And under current precedent in major jurisdictions like the US and the UK, copyright requires meaningful creative human authorship in the final expression.
Wow.
Because the machine generated the final text, it lacks that human authorship. Hmm. As a result, those 60 blog posts cannot be copyrighted.
And the business risk there is existential for brand. If we don't own the copyright, that means the content is essentially born into the public domain.
completely public.
A direct competitor could legally scrape our website, copy all 60 of those AI-generated blog posts, and republish them on their own site the exact same day, and we would have absolutely no legal recourse to stop them.
None. You would have handed your competitor your entire marketing strategy for free.
That's wild.
If a business wants to claim ownership over AI-assisted content and make it an enforceable asset, humans must meaningfully intervene. You cannot just copy and paste the output.
You have to get your hands dirty.
Yes. You just have to aggressively edit it, restructure it, inject original human insight, and alter the expression enough that human fingerprints are undeniably present. Generative AI can only ever be the starting draft.
So what does this all mean? Looking at all these Excel scenarios together, summarizing meeting notes, coding a login portal, dodging a deepfake CFO, and accidentally forfeiting the rights to your own marketing materials, it reveals a huge flaw in how companies usually handle compliance.
It really does expose a gap.
Traditional corporate training is often just a static video shouting abstract rules at you. You know, do not share data or do not steal IP.
People just tune it out.
They do, because these situations do not feel like malicious rule breaking. They feel like doing your job efficiently.
What's fascinating here is that that is the exact core philosophy behind the Excellus methodology, which they call the decision readiness engine.
It's a decision readiness engine.
Yeah, it recognizes human context.
Mm.
In every single scenario we discussed, the compliance exposures was completely invisible to the employee until it was explicitly pointed out.
Right.
They were just trying to save an hour on a summary, or 10 seconds on a script, or $8,000 on a budget line.
Generic training fails because employees are not acting with bad intent. They simply lack the framework to recognize where the invisible risks are hiding in these new workflows.
Exactly. The goal of the decision readiness engine is to build psychological muscle memory. It is about training your brain to recognize the specific compliance moment, that split second under the pressure of a deadline, where the AI offers you a frictionless shortcut.
That's the trap.
The training teaches you to pause and evaluate the unseen price tag of that efficiency before rationalization takes over.
It is about forcefully inserting a mental speed bump right before your finger hits the enter key. For everyone listening, regardless of whether you sit in IT, finance, marketing, or operations, recognizing that decision moment is your ultimate professional defense mechanism.
It really is.
The machine will always prioritize speed. It is your responsibility to prioritize safety. We set out today to map the hidden minefield of generative AI, and I think we have established some crucial guardrails.
I agree.
We cover the stranger rule for data privacy. You know, if you wouldn't email sensitive data to a stranger, it does not belong in a public AI model.
A great rule to live by.
We explored the junior intern rule for development. Never blindly trust the structural logic of an AI coding assistant without line-by-line human verification. We highlighted the absolute necessity of process verification to defeat the flawless sensory hacking of deepfakes.
Don't trust your ears.
Exactly. And we unpacked the idea-expression dichotomy to show that human authorship is the only legal path to owning your intellectual property.
It requires a fundamental shift in how we value our own work. And building on that final discussion about copyright and ownership, I want to leave you, the listener, with a lingering thought to mull over.
Oh, I love these. What's the thought?
If the law dictates that AI-generated content inherently lacks copyright protection because it is machine-made, and considering that public AI models are constantly out there scraping and consuming each other's synthesized, mathematically perfect data,
yep,
will the future's most valuable, legally protected business assets be defined exclusively by their messy, verifiable, and inherently human imperfections?
Wow. The perfection of the machine is exactly what makes it unownable.
Precisely.
The unique, unpredictable messiness of human thought is the only thing the law actually protects. Keep that in mind the next time you are hovering over the enter key, deciding how much of the driving you want to hand over to the algorithm. Stay curious, everyone. Question the shortcuts and keep diving deep.